Welcome to this week's edition of the Shoot the Moon podcast, presented by Revenue Rocket. Thank you for joining us today. As a quick reminder, Revenue Rocket is the premier growth champion for IT services companies worldwide. We're happy to have you with us today, and it's just me, Matt Lockhart, and my partner, Ryan Barnett, today. We're missing our founding partner, Mike Harvath, who should be back with us very soon. But I think we've got a great discussion lined up today, Ryan. Welcome.
Well, hey, thanks, Matt, and thanks for everyone who's listening here today. As you mentioned, we're really focused on M&A and growth strategy for IT services companies. And we always try to tackle an issue that we're seeing within our client base and walk through it. And something that's come up of interest of late is really the open-minded approach towards towards business as well as M&A. If you're trying to, I'll set this up, and if you're trying to find the absolute perfect deal where there's perfect people and perfect money and perfect strategy and perfect culture and perfect timing and everything else, it's very likely a deal won't get done. And some of the same could be said if you're picking a strategy and you're trying to find absolutely everything perfect. You may come to a point where decision making becomes so hard that you just make no decision because perfect doesn't exist in the reality of the confines of which we do real work. So today, Matt, you've been very creative in some of the deals that we've looked at and the opportunity here, and love to have just a discussion on M&A specifically, on if you're trying to buy a company, perhaps where you want to have some flexibility or where you perhaps want to be very rigid, and on either on the buy side or sell side, as well as just company strategy on perhaps adapting to things. So as environments change, you're willing to change with them. So Matt, I'd love to hear your opinion and get you, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, sounds good, Ryan. So let's frame it in the context of buy side or inorganic growth, right? So buy side M&A. And as we have advised for, 23 years now, the leading companies, so top quartile companies, have strength in both organic and inorganic growth. So top quartile companies have an ongoing M&A strategy, and they continue to evolve that strategy in finding appropriate targets that can help them, increase value and increase their position in the marketplace. When we look at bringing opportunities together, we always look at things in that three fits, right? The cultural fit, the strategic fit, and the financial fit. Obviously first for buy side is identifying what is the strategic goals for a firm, and why are we looking at buy side M&A as a means to reach those strategic goals? And oftentimes we're looking at extending market, right? So just growing your market share, that's one of the areas that firms look at. Also looking at expanding and growing capabilities and or service offerings and or increasing the competitive position around one service offerings. It could be related to growing a specific customer base, right? And increasing and growing into a larger enterprise customer base. So there's a lot of these different strategic factors that firms are looking at. in driving, you know, sort of their overall M&A strategy. And, you know, all of those are good. But, you know, sometimes things don't line up perfectly, Ryan, to your point. And it's super important to prioritize which of the strategic factors are most important and which ones, you know, you could have flexibility on. And so, I think it's important to note that buy side M&A is not easy. If it were easy, everybody would be doing it all the time. And so in the idea that A, you know, you need to do it to be in that top quartile of firms, right? You need to do it and truly increase your value in the marketplace. And so looking at that strategic lens is oftentimes, well, it is the first place to look, but you need to really prioritize what has to matter and where you have flexibility. And that flexibility is absolutely key in order to find, and increase the opportunities that you have to look at. So that you can be successful in your M&A efforts. So I think that's probably a great place to start.
Yeah, I think it's a great setup. And the scenario you put out there is a very real one. If you're trying to increase, let's say, revenue share, you might be willing to be less or be very, very flexible on the technology focus area. Of something like revenue growth or EBITDA growth is paramount. You're still likely going to pick something that's very strategic or close to what you're doing or maybe an adjacent market, but you may be willing to incorporate a new service offering that you don't know as much about today to simply increase revenue or simply increase profit. Or I shouldn't say simply to focus on those revenue and profit areas. Kind of when I think about it, there's things you can flex there, and there's some things that just you don't want to break. I would say if you're going into an initiative, one of the items if you're trying to buy a company is if you flex midstream on going after a completely different technology set, it takes a bit for a pipeline to rebuild. So it helps to have either options when you start to look at a maybe two or three different technology areas that you want to get into, or it helps to have a general categories to help build that pipeline. But if one day you're looking at let's say ERP implementers, and the next day you're looking at CRM implementers, and the third day you're looking for BI platforms, and the fourth day that you're looking for a data center. You know, those are all completely different companies to find the right one for your company can be hard. I'd also give a caution that if you have a very, very wide expanse of targets, that's also dangerous. So there's a level of flexibility, but if you ask for the world and you try to be anything to anyone or everything to anyone, that's also a potential for failure.
Yeah, somewhat dependent upon the size of a firm, right, Ryan, and the sort of overall length of a mandate and a strategic mandate. I say that it's interesting. I had this conversation just yesterday with a firm that does have a number of different target areas that they're working towards. High performance cloud is one area. A growing capability in a new platform is another area, not cloud platform. Just continuing to grow their capability within, you know, their digital transformation efforts, right? And you can see how all of these things, you know, sort of come together with the same purpose of sort of next generation capability. So all of those are good. To your point, Those are different focus areas. So which of those focus areas are a priority, or are they all an equal priority? If they're all an equal priority, then you have sort of three different ongoing mandates that are happening. So you should have the appropriate budget and horsepower to go after all of those mandates. Or if you don't, then you need to prioritize which of those really matters. So in the context of having flexibility, that particular firm truly does have flexibility, but managing the flexibility versus the prioritization, I think, is super important in that sort of, in that strategic lens.
I absolutely agree. I would say when you're also, and this is more focused on if you're trying to acquire another company, if you think about some areas that have ranges to them, I'll say one is size. And so I would say if you're evaluating firms, size should be, or specific size might be one of the last things you consider for evaluating a company. And so oftentimes it's great to work in a range. Let's say if you're a company that's $20 million in revenue, you may have a flexible range of 7 to 23 million of firms that you're looking for, and depending on how that might impact your firm. But if you say, I only want a $5 million firm, or I only want a $20 million firm, it's hard for most firms don't have revenue posted. It's not a publicly available thing. So if you're screening out digitally on something like size, that can be a very dangerous cut to your list. Ultimately, in the IT services world, there are a finite number of firms, and I think we think that list is way bigger than it actually is. So it's important to keep in mind that if you are looking for size and scale, that list of companies that you're looking for in your target market could be quite scarce. Another option where you can flex upon is geography. And as we've seen coming into or coming out of COVID, in the emergence of remote work, we really encourage firms to take a look at nationwide or even global searches. It's been much easier to go to work somewhere else and to hire throughout the United States, and reducing those geographic boundaries can oftentimes have dramatic flair. And then the third area where you can flex, it does some of the technology focus areas. So sometimes if you're trying to find a very, very specific niche, then go after that. I think you end up typically either paying in time or money if you're going to be very specific in a niche, but that maybe that's something you need. And I do encourage that that technology focus area you have some flexibility on, but whoever you're working with, even if it's your own internal team, you really have to put some parameters around who you're trying to focus or what kind of capabilities you're trying to bring to the firm. And are they going to align with your current stack and trying to grow growth there, or are you trying to bring something new to the fray to help bring additional services to your customers or attract a new customer service set? The last thing, I think there's some, you know, this is an interesting discussion, when you're sourcing, culture is very hard to find. But I would say as you go throughout, culture is something you may not want to flex on. If you have two opposite sides of culture, a deal can break after it's done. Matt, do you have any additional insights or thoughts on perhaps that culture component?
Yeah, it's interesting, Ryan. I was thinking about that as well as you were talking, and you know, culture is very difficult, right? It's sort of the DNA of an organization, right? And is in most cases driven through leadership, right? Obviously, and in many cases with founder-led businesses, growing middle market technology firms that really meant the CEO, and sometimes the founder. And to your point, culture can't be on two different tracks with firms. If one firm is very much a top down driven management style, right? And leadership style, which is, fine, neither here nor there, right? And another firm has really focused on distributing decision making, and not having a top down leadership style. Well, those are going to be in conflict and likely aren't going to work together. Now, so, usually it's not a black and white situation, right? With regards to culture, and culture can change and does change over time. So maybe one firm has had a history of being sort of more top down, or they're larger because they need a greater level of governance within an organization. Yet the mentality within the organization really grew from roots that were more of a bottom up, drive decisions out in, out throughout the organization. Well, then by working together, you can come to the middle in terms of sort of that governance decision making, which is an aspect of the culture of an organization. So it's not black and white. Right. It needs to be worked through. It's difficult, but there are indicators that would say that there is a mismatch. And we've seen scenarios where deals get done, even though it's a recognized sort of cultural mismatch. But the challenges come after the deals happen. So I think great point, Ryan, and one in that having as much transparency in the process around the cultural attributes of two parties is critical. And for our buy side customers, we do work with them. Sometimes they don't really understand what their most important cultural attributes are. So we work with them to identify and make sure that those are known and transparent, throughout the overall, buy-side process.
Yeah, great point. If I switch gears a little bit here, Matt, and I think about a seller, and if you're trying to take to your company to market, I think there's a pretty decent standard that sellers want. They want a great financial outcome, but they're also they'd like to see their employees do well, and they like their customers to continue to do well, and that I think there's to have that legacy kept. But when you're selling your company, it's a little bit different of an attitude. And that brings us up in terms of a buyer. When you're looking at a company, I think you have to explain why this fits, and you can protect legacy and you can protect employees. But I'd like to get your perspective, Matt, on what level of flexibility should a seller have when they consider their suitor.
Well, I think, another great point, Ryan. I think that we start with customers on a real simple, three step path. What first is if you're considering the sale of your business, are you ready? Right? Are you really emotionally ready? Are you ready for that next chapter? And quite honestly, you can't have a ton of flexibility in that one. You're either ready and you need to commit, or you're not, right? Secondly, do you have a number in mind, right? And have you planned that out? Have you thought of that? And there, important to have some level of flexibility, right? Now, obviously, there's a bottom rung in that flexibility, but you know, flexibility in terms of you know, what is the ultimate enterprise value and kind of how do you get there? And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of different term structures and creativity needs to be in place, to be able to meet, an overall maximized enterprise value. And the more flexibility that you have in that, you know, the higher the enterprise value can be. Now, if you don't have flexibility in terms of term structure and your number, if your number is appropriate, then, and you're looking for, maximization of cash, well, then you need to have some flexibility in recognizing that you may be on the lower end of an overall, you know, valuation range. And then, you know, ultimately, having the flexibility and understanding that you're not going to be in control anymore is super important. Yet you want to do right by your firm, by your people. And so having the mentality of working with, a buyer, to ensure that people are taken care of, to ensure that clients are taken care of, right? So flexibility in going into a deal of saying, okay, I know that things are going to change. How do I help to make that change as positive and accepted for my team as possible? That is where I think that we counsel, you know, sellers to have the sort of the most amount of flexibility is to be open and adaptable in working with a buying firm.
Yes, I think there's so much uncertainty when you start out on a process, and sometimes I think it's, if you're too restrictive on the suitors that you're taking a look at, it can damage the process. Again, your advisor is looking to help you find meaningful legacy for yourself. They're also trying to find to get a deal done that meets your parameters. So I think there is flexibility in selling. Sometimes it's finding the right suitor. Sometimes it might be a deal term. Sometimes it might be timing. Sometimes it might be accepting future risks through an earnout, or and you have to get comfortable with the options there. I think the big piece of advice I'd give is that your advisor can help you walk through the myriad of options that are there for you, and some that you may not consider today. Going back to where we started, creativity wins in this business, and it helps to have understanding and flexibility where you can come to a win-win situation.
Yeah, it's funny you say that creativity wins. I was sort of thinking there's the two sides of the coin. One is what is ideal, right? And what is an ideal fit? And then the flip side to that coin is creativity and flexibility wins, right? So I think it's important to have that sort of dual focus, bifocal glasses, if you will. It's like in the near term, as you're looking, it's like, let's keep working towards that ideal fit, while understanding that in the long term, you know, flexibility is what's going to enable, you know, real value creation. And we oftentimes say, you know, how do we enable 1 + 1 to equal, you know, 4, 5, or 6 in the return of bringing firms together?
Right. Right. Absolutely. Well, man, I think we got the concept here. There's a podcast we've done in the past called the Ideal Prospect Profile compared to the Acceptable Prospect Profile. And I think this aligns with some of the things we've talked about there. In general, I'd summarize, if you're buying a company, you keep something is likely going to give, and that might be money, the amount of money that you pay. It might be the strategy that you go. It might be the geography. It might be the size. It might be the technology focus. I don't think you want all five moving them, those things moving at once. It's like getting advice on your golf swing. You want to focus perhaps on one area instead of changing all five at once. But keep in mind there are flexibility within any kind of process. This doesn't mean to go by anything. You know, there's still going to be parameters, but keep in mind that you do have a number of areas where you can flex. And then on the sell side, the same thing goes. If you're looking to capture the most money in a transaction, you may want to give up on some of those strategic fits, understanding that that you could still have a legacy for your customers and employees beyond what you have to hear today. But being flexible on timing, on deal terms, on the buyer. Buyers may come completely out of a different industry and want to be in your industry. So sometimes you don't have to understand every point of why they're looking strategically at your company, and that there may be multiple cogs in play. So with that said, I'll turn it over to you, Matt. Anything else you'd like to add?
Just reinforce, I think, that the leading companies, top quartile companies, have ongoing M&A efforts, and so it's if you don't today have that, you know, I'd worth a conversation, I think, to think about incorporating that into your overall strategic goals. But great discussion. Thanks for leading us again today, Ryan. And with that, we'll tie a ribbon on it for this episode of the Shoot the Moon podcast. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to more exciting topics on M&A and growth strategy for IT services firms worldwide next week. Thanks. Have a great week.